The end of this century has seen a surge of immigration into this country greater than any since the early 1900s. Almost half of these new citizens came from Latin America and the Caribbean. Among the most successful are Mayan Indians, who came from a single town in Guatemala and now live in Houston, Texas. They've found secure jobs, they've started up churches and soccer teams, they've acquired homes and cars, and now they face the challenge of preserving their ancient culture in their adopted home. NPR's John Burnett reports.
The faces of the people praying in this evangelical church in West Houston are the same faces etched in stone on pre-Columbian pyramids lost in the jungles of Central America. They are Mayan Indians from Guatemala. And at this Thanksgiving service at the Iglesia de Dios Leander, they're waving their arms, praising Jehovah, and giving thanks for safe passages into this new world. Over the past 20 years, some 2,000 indigenous people from a poor town in the western highlands of Guatemala called San Cristobal Totonicapán have immigrated to America's fourth largest city. They formed a remarkably self-supporting community that's become a case study of survival and success in a strange land. It all started with a church member named Juan Shanash in 1978. He left San Cristobal for Houston, not to escape Guatemala's bloody guerrilla war, which bypassed San Cristobal. He left in order to earn money to send home for his son, who was dying of leukemia.
God gave me the opportunity to open a road for all. Principally, it was a decision to advance myself and to know a new country. I had never left my country before. When I came to Houston, I was the first. I didn't know anybody, only two women from San Cristobal who had been here for 40 years. They tried to help me, but it was hard, especially the communication. I couldn't go anywhere because I didn't understand the language. I had many self-doubts.
For all of his insecurities, Shanash established the beachhead for his in-laws, cousins, aunts, and uncles, who were followed by their relatives, who were followed by their relatives. Gradually, they recreated a Mayan village amid the new immigrant neighborhoods of southwest Houston, already teeming with Vietnamese, Salvadorans, Pakistanis, and Iranians. The San Cristobalenses, as they call themselves, stuck together like family. Many lived in the same apartment complex, attended the same church, drove home for holidays in caravans together, and worked for the same employer. So many San Cristobalenses have gotten jobs at a Houston supermarket chain called Randall's, at least 500 by the company's count, that one Maya remarked with a grin, "Randall's is our plantation." The steady work at the upscale markets has been a key factor in the Maya's success. Store manager Roger Kaner says it's no mystery why his company likes them.
For some reason, their work ethic is so strong that you don't have to tell them more than once. You always get 100% from them. I think from where they come from, that's how they do things. They work hard. We pay them a good wage. They do us a good job, so it's a good partnership.
Juan Shanash, the first San Cristobalense, got his start at Randall's. He had his epiphany when a woman tipped him $5, which was his daily wage in Guatemala. Max Chavez, another San Cristobal native, was able to get on at Randall's shortly after he arrived 12 years ago.
A paper plaster.
Okay. Max stands beside a checkout counter, stuffing packages of tuna helper, chili lime tortilla chips, and caramel-flavored popcorn into a plastic sack.
Por regular, los San Cristobalenses han ocupado más Randall's.
San Cristobalenses like Randall's because they're good to us. They don't mistreat us. They don't yell at us like they do in Guatemala. They say, please mop the floor. And Randall's likes us because we don't make trouble. The Mexicans make conflicts, but not the Guatemalans. We're more peaceful.
In his white polo shirt, khaki pants, and company name tag, Max Chavez looks like any other employee, but his 5-foot stature and his gait, forward-leaning, perpetually hurried, are unmistakably Mayan. For him, this giant 62,000-square-foot supermarket, with its own sushi department, drive-through pharmacy, and in-store playroom, is a cornucopia that aptly symbolizes his new home. Here you have everything, he says, just like this country. The San Cristobalenses are unique among illegal immigrants who often flounder in their adopted homes. A survey of all groups of undocumented Central Americans in Houston found the Guatemalans had the greatest household stability and the highest income. That's because they drew on what sociologists call internal resources to support one another.
And it was because of strong ties, and both family ties and friendship ties, all linked to the very same place of origin that enabled them to survive and prosper.
Nestor Rodriguez is a sociologist at the University of Houston. He and his colleague, Jackie Hagen, have closely tracked the Maya's immigrant experience.
It is very much an immigrant success story for many, not all of the Maya. There are some who've gone back who didn't make it, but for many it is. They start out, you know, some documented single men migrating, joined by their wives, living in apartments, several to an apartment, finding jobs, having kids, and now they end up as houses in the suburbs with color TV and all the modern appliances that any American home has, with two or three cars in the garage and Visa, MasterCards in their wallets.
His description closely fits the family of Max Chavez, the Randall Sacker we heard from earlier. Max left San Cristobal in 1986. At the time, he was making $75 a week at a sweater factory. He crossed Mexico on his own. On his fourth try, he finally slipped past the border patrol in Laredo. He brought his wife and five children up later.
Los tamales son de papa.
In the kitchen of his suburban home, his wife Paula is heating paches, a traditional Mayan tamale made of potato and chile wrapped in banana leaves. Watching her is 18-year-old Henry, who in May will become the first Chavez to graduate from high school.
Bueno, desde muy pequeña con mis papás.
I grew up in a very poor family, and I started working when I was 9. I married at 16 and cared for the children. In this country, I worked to earn money to send for our children. We paid $2,500 each for me and my five children to be smuggled from Guatemala to Texas. We always hope our children will do better than we did. We always lamented our parents could not give us an education. Neither my husband nor I ever went to school. But we have the hope to overcome as best we can.
Both parents work 6 days a week, often from sunup to sundown. Max goes to Randall's during the day and cleans offices at night. Paula works as a maid. On a joint income of $22,000 a year, they own two used cars, free and clear, and they just purchased their first home, a four-bedroom, two-bath tract house. Considering this time last year, the family was living in a one-bedroom apartment, their 16-year-old daughter, Maria, marvels at all the space.
There's one restroom, and this is my brother's room, both of my brothers. This is my room and my little sister's. We love teddy bears, so we have a whole bunch of teddy bears.
The Chavez family is unusually prosperous for San Cristobalenses. Certainly they work hard and they're frugal, but there's another reason for their good fortune. They're legal. Max was lucky to arrive in 1986, the last year the federal government offered amnesty to illegal immigrants. Family members who came later were also granted residency. Later arrivals still live in the shadows. Without resident status, they cannot get a job at Randall's to save money for a house, and their children cannot advance beyond high school. For them, the American dream is tantalizingly close, but untouchable. A group of Mayas sits around a table at Houston's only Guatemalan restaurant, called Lo Nuestro, Our Own. It's the only place in town where you can get a plate of chuchitos and plátanos fritos and wash it down with gallo beer. This country, thank God, is one of opportunities, says one man in an Adidas cap. If you want to work like we Guatemalans do, we can better ourselves. Unfortunately, it's not the same for new immigrants. They have lots of problems. A community leader named Enrique Sapon says now that everybody knows about the achievements of the early San Cristobalenses, newer migrants come to Houston with inflated expectations.
In Guatemala, Mayans don't have a voice or a vote. We're marginalized because we're indigenous and we're poor. But it's not a sin to have been born poor. This is why we came here, because we couldn't improve ourselves in Guatemala. Over there, when you meet a person with a little money, they tell us to shut up. We don't matter. But we found the same thing in the United States. Our countrymen who don't have legal papers are still marginalized.
But that urgently sought prosperity has its own consequences. As assimilation is accelerated, the fabric of Mayan tradition unravels. This is a culture whose land tenure, farming practices, religious customs, and languages predate the Spanish conquest. Back at the Evangelical Church, Kevin Chavez, a 30-year-old insurance adjuster born to Mayan parents, says in Texas, many of his countrymen are quickly abandoning their Indian dialects and traditional clothing because they don't want to be stigmatized.
There's been a lot of misconceptions about the Mayan community. They, to some extent, even in the Spanish media, sometimes we're portrayed as maybe being dumb. They don't know any better. And that's really not the case at all. And I guess that fear has basically caused them to, even among some women, to reject the clothes outright, the Mayan huipil, the corte.
As a way to instill pride among young Mayas and teach them about their traditions, in September, the Guatemalan community staged the coronation of the Reina Indígena, the Indian Queen. It's a big deal in Guatemala. The queen acts as a sort of goodwill ambassador who goes from town to town representing noble Mayan womanhood. The Houston pageant was only symbolic, but having it at all was an accomplishment given the disorganized state of the Guatemalan community. For the occasion, teenaged Mayan girls switched out their Gap t-shirts and old navy jeans for huipiles and cortes, the elaborate embroidered blouses and wraparound skirts of their mother's generation. They paraded stiffly onto the stage of a high school auditorium and curtsied to the outgoing queen as the master of ceremonies spoke grandiloquently of the motherland.
Guatemala hermosa, tierra de los más hermosos paisajes.
While the Maya of San Cristóbal Totonicapán would like to preserve many indigenous customs, there's much of their old lives, the poverty, the discrimination, the lack of opportunity, they prefer never to revisit. And although for many of them, the difficult journey to their new world is unfinished, they've already succeeded in giving their children something that's in short supply in the land of their ancestors. Hope. I'm John Burnett, NPR News, Houston.